There's a mic in front of
me. I think I put it down.
I think open. Okay.
Thanks. Keep it up. Can I hook that?
You, oh, yeah. You can.
Maybe.
I'll check.
Yeah?
Well, those teenage marriages never work out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want to?
There are exceptions to every rule. As Werner said, we had to wait till she was 17 so it'd be legal. She twisted my arm, you know. It's a long story. We won't get into that. But we have been married almost 50 years tomorrow. It will be 50 years, and it's been a wonderful time. God has gifted us with four kids who are all disciples, and they met their future spouses at church. We were living in San Diego, California, most of those years, and he's given us 10 grandchildren. They live all over the western United States, and Hawaii, Denver, Colorado, San Diego, and our oldest son and his wife and two children live about 15 minutes from us. Our oldest granddaughter is 19. Our youngest is 7?
Yeah.
7 or 8. But it's been a busy life. And
can I tell the story about Courtney Lowe?
Yeah.
Okay, so we were at dinner with a family in Joburg. And the father was telling the three daughters, 4 years old, 6 years old, and 8 years old, Ron and Linda are here from America, and they've been married nearly 50 years. And the six-year-old said, shouldn't they be dead now?
So I said, we're going to die laughing, yeah. But just in case somebody accuses us of being no-tech, we're low-tech.
Ta-da!
You know, there's high-tech and no-tech. We're kind of low-tech. What we want to talk about is the atmosphere in the home that we tried to achieve over the years. We have about a 9-year spread from our oldest to youngest. And we feel like it was such a blessing from God to have the privilege, and Werner mentioned that in his comments, what a privilege is to have children. And I'm sure you would all agree with that, that it's a miracle in the first place, how it all happens, but then a privilege and very, very hard work. And we're going to be talking about that. We feel so grateful to be in Cape Town. We were in Johannesburg in 1995 when the International Leaders Conference was there, and we didn't really get to see much of anything. We were in a hotel in downtown Johannesburg, and we saw the hotel. And that was about it. This time we've really seen the northwest, the east, the central parts of regions of the church. And then we've been up in Pretoria for a week and a half or so. And we've never been to Cape Town. Ron, I don't know if you know Ron and Lavanya Drabo. They used to lead the church in Joburg. They came from here. They left Joburg and went to Chicago. And that's where we met them. We were living in Chicago. I was an elder there. And he raved about the beauty of Cape Town. And I says, well, you haven't been to San Diego. But they're very, very comparable. This reminds us a lot of San Diego, California. But it's a beautiful place. Mike and Daphne took us on a tour down to the Cape, the Cape Point. We had a baboon experience that you'll have to ask us about. He thought he was invited to be a part of our lunch group, but what a beautiful place this is, and we feel honored to have been asked to come, and very thankful we were in the position where we could come. But the goal that we want to put before all of us about raising kids is stated for us, I think, over in Proverbs chapter 1, and if you'll turn over there. If I can find Proverbs, there it is. Chapter 1, verse 8. It says, listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They will be a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. You know, what is it about our teaching and our training that will help our kids, will put our kids in a position of thinking of our teaching and our training that they get those 17 years that they're with you as a beautiful something to go around their neck, a jewelry for their life? How do we achieve that? What a great goal that is. And I want that to be a special thought in your mind from this day on, to think of what you're doing with your children while you've got them at home. You won't always have them at home. Ours, you know, they're all gone. I thought, good grief, we had four kids, I'll be a lifetime of kids. But they left years ago. We've been empty nesters, kind of the envy of all of you, empty nesters for a number of years. But what is it that we can do to make it possible for our kids to leave our house thinking, wow, what a great experience. I'm so grateful to my mom and dad for what they instilled in me. It's like a jewelry that adorns me. So it's only by the power of God will our kids see our parenting that way. It's only by the grace of God. And we've got to stay close to God. But we're going to suggest a few things that might help. First of all, an atmosphere of love. You know, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, if you would turn over there, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 7. It says, we were gentle among you, and this is Paul talking to the Thessalonians, and he's trying to figure out, I'm sure you've all written letters and notes of encouragement to different people, and you're trying to think of analogies that will help the person understand the depth of your feeling. Paul hit upon an idea about a mother and a father. And he said, okay, everybody understands, you know, in an ideal situation, the love of a mother, the love of a father. And he said, verse 7, we were gentle among you like a mother caring for her little children. We loved you so much that we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well, because you became so dear to earth, to us. Exemplifies that kind of love? We loved you so much that we were not only, you know, sharing the gospel, but our lives as well. What are some earmarks of that kind of love? Well, and we're talking regarding children 0 to 10 years old. We're going to talk regarding older kids later this morning. But this first hour, I hope, do we have an hour?
We have half an hour now.
We have half an hour. Oh, boy. Okay. Well, we got to talk fast, so listen real fast. Being from the South, I don't know how to talk fast, so just bear with us. We don't need this. So this kind of love, I think, is exemplified by lots of affection, little guys, lots of hugging, lots of kissing, lots of picking up and holding and snuggling. And it's you know, one of the great delights of having children is all of that, just being able to hug and snuggle and kiss, and you know, and they just love it. But some children don't get it. They're not on the receiving end of that kind of thing. And we're saying that to raise godly children, they've got to start out with that. Praising children. Where are those papers? Could I have just one? I've got some handouts for you, and I didn't want to give them to you beforehand because I know what you're like. You will just sit there and read them, and I really want you to listen. But 101 ways to praise a child. Wow, way to go, super, you're special, outstanding, excellent, great, good, neat, well done, remarkable, I knew you could do it, I'm proud of you. Phrases like that, words like that, are just so good for children to hear. It affirms them. It makes them, you know, realize that, boy, mom and dad are really tuned into me. They really love me. We're talking about establishing an atmosphere of love. You know, they need to be believed in. Our children are built in, have a built-in need to be believed in, to be affirmed for their ideas, their thoughts, you know, to... And so often it's easy for us as parents to kind of, you know, kids are to be seen, not heard, but they need to be heard.
You know, I was kind of surprised when I first started reading the Bible and found that in Titus 2 it says older women should teach younger women to love their husbands and children, and that seemed strange to me because I thought, gosh, I can't think of anything that comes more naturally. Why would you have to be taught that? And that was because I had a really worldly view, and I think...
Am I doing something wrong?
No, I think I'm magic.
Oh.
I think that we define love by however we've experienced love, but that may not always be what love truly is. We also define love by our cultures and what our cultures tell us is love. And right now, our culture in America is telling us that love means you expose your child to every possible aspect of their lives that could develop some talent. And if you don't, if you're not really getting them tutoring and pushing them in school and getting them in the best schools and aiming for college from kindergarten on or whatever that is here, if you're not getting them exposed to music and dance and every kind of sports, then you're really not loving your child properly. That's what our culture is telling us. But I, even when our children were small, I was trying to figure out how to balance my life. I was like, woo, we're going to church, you know, six times a week, and we've got our kids in...
Almost literally in those days.
Yeah, it was Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, Bible talk, and a Friday night Devo. So it was only five. I did exaggerate, sorry. But, so I was trying to figure all that out, and I asked a sister that I really respected a lot, how do you manage all that? And she had come under great criticism from her family because they were saying, oh, you've got your kids out at church all the time. They're out late on a midweek night when they have to get up and go to school the next day. And, you know, so her parents were really giving her a bad time about living a Christian life with her children. And she said, this is what I told them. My children can go to heaven hungry. They can go to heaven ill-clad. They can go to heaven poor. They can go to heaven without great self-esteem. They can go to heaven without ever having been athletes. They can go to heaven illiterate. But they may not make it to heaven if I don't set an example for them of the kingdom is first and God matters above all. And I was like, wow. That settles my heart so much in knowing how to set the priorities for what I'm going to give time to and attention to in my home. And because Ron was a school teacher, I had started out wanting our children to know how to read before they ever got into school. I kind of thought it was my job to make sure they were academic stars because my husband was in education. But when I learned that, when I saw that priority, I switched from having daily academic lessons with them to daily studying the Bible with them. And I really am so grateful that came on early in my life so that I could change the priorities of focus in my home with my kids.
Amen. Another thing that equates to love, I think, is for you as mom and dad being open to input about your children, about your marriage, about your life, about your walk with God. And I think your openness to getting input and asking those closest to you, maybe they're a family member that's part of the church or somebody in your Bible talk, but being open to input. If not, if we're not getting input about our children and how they're doing and how we're doing with them from other people who are more objective oftentimes than we are, our kids are not going to be a whole lot different than the kids in the neighborhood, the other kids at school. There's an African proverb. We're in Africa now, and I haven't heard it, but, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. I've updated that. It takes a church to raise a child. And we raised four of them, and we had so much help with each of our children. One time we were doing a class kind of like this, and we listed, and there was probably four or five or six significant people for each of our four children in their life that really impacted them. And they, in some cases, that were teen workers, teen leaders, neighbors that that loved our kids, people that, you know, we were close to. But being open to input, we need to seek it. We need to ask for it. I think it's kind of too bad in one sense. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's a good thing. In the olden days, if you've been around the church for very long, you used to get input whether you asked for it or not. Remember those days? You used to get lots of input. Now, we hardly get any unless we ask for it and seek it. And so, what I am begging you on behalf of your children, get input about your children. You are too, we are too, subjective. We're not objective with about our children. So being open to input.
I think the second aspect of love, we don't have time this morning to confess all our sin to you, but I'll tell you what, most of the things we learned about parenting, we learned from our mistakes. And that's a sad thing to have to admit. And I know you'd love to hear the details of that. Today, because of time, we're going to try to tell you the things we look back on and say, we're so glad we did that. We think we did that right. But we can confess individually to you later about all of our sin in parenting. But what this chapter in 1 Thessalonians that Ron read from, the next verse says, surely you remember, brothers, our toil and hardship. We worked night and day in order not to be a burden to anyone while we preached the gospel of God to you. And, you know, that's so true of parenting. I know you all know that with young children. It's hard work. And sometimes it seems like it's going to last forever. I thought for a while, because our first two kids were 17 months apart, I thought, I will never see the day when I'm not changing a diaper. And then our youngest son was born, and I thought, oh, the last one. You know what? As soon as I get him through these first 6 months or so, I get to sleep a full night. It's going to be wonderful. He had really severe asthma, and I didn't sleep a full night until he was almost a teenager, because he was waking up every night. So, you know, but parenting's hard work. It just is. It's hard physical work. It's hard emotional work. The saying that when a mom gives birth to a child, her heart goes walking around outside her body. And it's true. There's just the hard physical work, the hard emotional work, the hard spiritual work. My parents were members of the traditional Church of Christ, and it occurred to me after I got into my mid-20s and thought, my life's a wreck, I'm messed up, I need to read the Bible, and I thought, how did it happen that I went to church every day or every week with my parents and I really don't know the Bible? How did that happen? And I thought, boy, I don't want that to happen with my own children. With my own children, I want to have gone from Genesis 1 to the end of Revelation with them by the time they leave my house so that I'm the one who's shared with them. I mean, it's 17 or 18 years. You have time. You can do that. But it's hard work. I think also one of the hardest works, and we'll talk about this later, is being consistent. And so we'll get to that.
Amen.
But it's hard.
Another thing that I think equates to love for your children is that dads and moms regularly schedule family devotionals. And one of the things that we're going to hand out to you in a minute is a sheet on family devotionals. And we have four or five typical family devotionals, but about 10 things, truths about family devotionals. And I'm not going to read them all to you. You can read it later. But planning and regular, weekly, scheduled, not too long, fun, happy experiences, that equates in the long haul to loving your children. You know, we look back and are so grateful that God placed it on our hearts to have regular family every week as the kids got older, even when they were teenagers. Sometimes when they thought they didn't have time, we devoted Monday evenings to our family time, and it was very inclusive. It was all biblical. We had other families in from time to time. Kids need to see us loving other families and loving other children. I think that raises our stock in their eyes when we truly love other people. It helps them to learn how to love. Love is talking with our kids, shutting off, unplugging them, unplugging yourself. The TV, the iPhone, the computer, the cell phone, all of the stuff that we have that we carry a lot of it around with us. And now I think it's all in one package. It's called a BlackBerry. I called them blueberries for a long time, but I kept getting corrected. I prefer blueberries over blackberries. Anyway, unplugging all of that stuff and talking with your children. It's, again, I know we're low-tech, as we evidence. We don't have I think Werner says, do you have a PowerPoint? I was a school teacher and a principal for many years. This is my PowerPoint. All of you kids, come in over and sit down here and be quiet, okay? And if you're not, I'll start calling names and taking names, and we'll talk after school for about 30 minutes. It's pretty effective. I had two at once. but anyway, shutting off all of that stuff and just reading with and talking to and enjoying the company of your children. And it's kind of weird that we even have to talk about that. But we as adults get so cotton-picking busy. Cotton-picking, that's an American expression. Sorry about that. Is it? Yeah, it is. You guys, is it? How many did we get on Daphne yesterday when we first met her? Not Daphne.
No, Stephanie.
We were talking, and she did four is it's in one conversation. Anyway, cotton-picking is similar to is it. But anyway, talking with them, reading with them, getting to know your kids, all of that is under the category of loving your children. The second thing we want to talk about is laughter. In this 1 Thessalonians verse, it says, we loved you so much that we were delighted. Have you ever had anybody delight in you? Well, hopefully your spouse delights in you. When you come home from work, guys or gals, don't you want them to meet you with, a glass of water on a hot day like this, or a beer or whatever you like to drink, and just really just so excited to see you. Isn't that a wonderful feeling that somebody, some other human being that you love cares that much about you? I think that children deserve that. They didn't ask to be born into your family. They're kind of captive. They're captive to your name and to your atmosphere. And so kids by nature are fun loving. Have you ever seen two little kids just sit and talk, especially two little boys just sit and talk? They don't know how to do that. They just want to have fun. They can be an empty room with a piece of paper. The boys will probably wad the paper up and play a game with it. They'll have intricate rules as they get older. Girls will talk. As an elementary school headmaster, I remember being out on the playground, and invariably, it'd be a group, especially the kindergartners. Do you call them kindergartners here? The girls would be in a little clump talking, maybe with their dolls. The boys would be in a little clump, and there would be sounds. There would be either cars, or they'd be involved in bombing each other or strafing. But that be that as me.
Noises, and girls just make words.
Yeah. Guys make noises. Girls learn very
great
early.
Sound effects.
So as women get older, that's the reason women probably, I guess shouldn't get into that.
We practice all the time.
They've had more experience. Anyway, delighting in our children. Jesus says, let the little children come to me. Do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. What does he mean, such as these? I think part of that such is kids are fun-loving. And if home isn't a fun place, it's not going to be a real comfortable place for children. Children are adventurous, they're happy, they're forgiving, they're spontaneous, they're energetic. Failure to a child isn't final unless we overdo it and think it is. I remember the first time one of our kids, our oldest kid, lied. You would have thought he'd murdered somebody from my reaction.
When I cried.
I was so upset. How could you? We go to church five times a week. I just went on and on and on. And the poor little guy thought, whoa, I'll never tell them again.
Yeah, he had to get better at it.
Yeah, he got better at it. He's a great, great young man now. He's probably older than most of you. But he went underground with his stuff. Anyway, adults, unlike the kids, can get very calculated, formal, rigid, self-important, critical, easily distracted, kind of tuned out to what's going on. You know, it's hard for kids to relate to a mom or a dad who comes home after a hard day at work, dealing with all these important stuff, and still have that persona of all that stuff that goes on in the office. I appreciated one not long ago, our son, we were talking about this point, our oldest son, and he said he uses the time that he drives from work to home. Thankfully, his kids are older now because he lives about, 5 minutes from his work now. I didn't give him much time, but it used to, when kids were younger, he would use that time driving home to get his mind prepared, praying and thinking about getting in tune with the kids and the wife and their needs and not thinking about what just happened at work. And I think it does take a conscious focus. You know, in Proverbs 17, verse 22, it says, a cheerful heart is good medicine. A cheerful heart is good medicine. And I don't know if this is going to be really hard for you to change, but if you're not a fun-loving, happy, outgoing, spontaneous, energetic type of person, you need to start moving in that direction. And I know we all have different personalities, and it's really difficult for some of us, but kids need laughter. They need laughter along with love. They need for home to be a fun place. Again, they didn't ask to be born there. They're there for about 17, 18 years. If it's too bad, they may not be there that long. They may run off. No, that won't happen. But get help. Get help and form that cheerful heart that is good medicine for your family. I think kids need daily playtime. When they're little, they need daily playtime. You need to get out on the floor and throw them and turn them upside down and flip them and whatever they enjoy doing. I have some wonderful memories, and 10 grandkids I got to do this to. 4 kids and then 10 grandkids. 14 people I've flipped and thrown up and giggled and played the Beast and the Beauty, Beast and the Beauty, Beauty and the Beast, going around, I'm the Beast. And but we got to learn how to do that. It may be totally out of your nature to do that, but you need to learn how to be the Beast, guys. Come on. Rolling on the ground with them, tumbling, wrestling. Our 17-year-old grandson, when he was about 2, they were living in Germany, and we were there visiting, and we had been wrestling. And I said, Tucker, you have just beat the tar out of me. I can't wrestle anymore. And he says, Grandpa, when you get the tar back in you, can we wrestle some more?
And just like a year ago, this same grandson asked me to move so he could sit next to Ron. And I said, oh, you want to sit next to him? And he said, yeah. He's like my little brother.
they enjoy jokes, writing plays and performing plays, especially girls. And the guys will go along with it if you give them a sword or something. They enjoy making forts. Does it ever get cold here? cold, on a cold, rainy day, get the blankets out and drape them over the furniture and make forts and caves. Kids love that. It's not hard, guys. Really, it's fun. Try it, please. I beg you. Your kids need laughter. Treasure hunts, food fights. Yes, food fights. There was a couple of guys that we were discipling in Chicago, and they were kind of stiff, and this laughter thing was kind of below them. And they weren't even British, you know? And so I said, okay, I got to do something to loosen this guy up. So I said, okay, I told his wife and my wife, and after dinner, we were going to have a food fight. And so make some stuff that won't stain things. Spaghetti.
You can,
no sauce. Spaghetti, you can do this and throw it, and it'll go quite a ways, and then stick on a shirt. And you got him.
And it'll wash out. But I do have to qualify. This was easier at our house. We had a little eating nook that had three walls, and it had vinyl wallpaper. So even though the stuff would stick, it was really easy later to get all the kids, you know, say, okay, now we have to clean up the mess. But really, I had so much to learn because, Ron, even I know many people who believe it's wrong to jump on the bed. But Ron not only jumped on our king-size bed with our, not only let them do it, he jumped with them on our king-size bed. So it wasn't, and he said, you know, you can buy a new one when it gets too lumpy. And that was hard for me. But he did have fun with the children.
But she was an only child. She didn't get to play. You'll see. She's, well, anyway. laughter. Kids deserve and need laughter. You know, they need to see mom and dad talking and hugging and laughing just with each other. The atmosphere of laughter. You know, as they get older, taking a daddy and daughter date, having a great time with your daughter, or a daughter mommy date, or, you know, it's just so important for our kids to have a good time. Daily.
Can I say about the daddy-daughter date? Ron and I, for several years, have taken charge of a daddy-daughter date. We've kind of created the idea and have done it at church, daddy-daughter dance. And one of the things we've learned is a lot of those daddies don't have a clue how to keep a conversation going with their little girl. And so what we've done is we've put conversation cards, and they can just draw them to ask each other questions and keep the conversation going, because for whatever reason, because dad, if they could have blown things up with them and made airplane noises and all of that, dads relate more easily to little boys, but the conversation we had to help with.
Yeah, and it was really precious to see the dads and daughters at this date night. We had them, we had two a year, one for the younger girls and one for the older girls. And I prepped the guys. I had a little pre-session with the guys. I says, guys, if I see you talking with each other, I'll come and embarrass you. Don't talk to your buddies. Talk to your daughters. This is their night. And so we made those conversation cards. And it was really neat to see the dads. So what is your most... what was one of them?
Favorite movie.
What is your favorite movie?
I like Beauty and the Beast.
Why?
Well, because.
Anyway, we had a whole bunch of those, and we would stage a dance or two, and then okay, everybody back to the table, and it was really neat. All righty, you know, you already talked about laughing at your business. Okay, all right. The third thing we want to talk about is law. Often when we have workshops like this, people want to talk about law, you know, discipline. We refuse to talk to people about discipline of children until we've talked about, spent most of our time talking about love and laughter. Because the atmosphere of sound discipline is in the atmosphere of love and laughter. If we, you know, we definitely believe in paddling or spanking or whatever you call it. I think you guys call it spanking. Yeah, we definitely believe in it because God believes in it. If you don't believe in it, take it up with God. but children, we really have, you know, in Proverbs 19, verse 18, it says, discipline your son, for in that there is hope. Whoa. What gives you hope for your child? Discipline. Do not be a willing party to his death. Can you believe the Bible says that? It does. Where was it? Proverbs 19, verse 18. Hebrews 12, 1 says, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, it produces wonderful fruit. You know, we really believe, in the context of love and laughter, the right order, discipline, paddling, whatever you have to do, setting limits, whatever you want to call it, is so, so appropriate. It's biblical. It's of God. apart from love and laughter, however, discipline can be, I think, it can be negative, it can be ineffective, and it can even border on abusive. If your child doesn't have that atmosphere of love and laughter, of happiness, knowing you've proven over and over and over, day after day after day, how much you love them and delight in them and have fun with them, unless you've convinced them of that, paddling them can be, you know, wow. It's not right for children. In Galatians chapter 6 and in 1 Timothy 3, we get an insight into God's thinking on this subject. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 1, where am I? Ephesians chapter 6, what am I thinking? Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with the promise, that it may go well with you, and that you may enjoy long life on the earth.
God gives adults all kinds of commands, but for children, these are the only two. These are the only two commands for children in the Bible. And I think that needs to be so on our hearts as parents, to keep that priority in our mind, how important it is to God that our children be obedient and respectful.
Yeah. you know, the zillions of things that we want to teach our kids, those are the two biggies that are in the Bible. Obedience and respect. If you get that down, you've kind of, you know, done your job. And there's a lot of other stuff for sure. You know, from day one, we need to expect obedience from our children. We need to have clear boundaries, clear expectations, clear consequences. From day one, from little bitty guys, when you're changing their diaper and they're arching their back, you need to let them know that that's a no-no and mean it. Even stop that. No. And they get it. Children are brilliant. They understand stuff way before we think they do. You know, kids rise or sink to the level of our expectations. If we don't expect them to obey, they're not going to. Or if we tell them stuff and then don't follow through, They're going to ignore your suggestions, your comments, your anything that they don't agree with. So children, little kids, and again, we're talking 0 to 10. Children, and listen to this, and I really firmly believe it. We practiced it, and it worked with ours. Kids need to obey quickly, completely, and happily. You shouldn't have to talk them into it. You shouldn't have to lure. Well, if you don't want to do that, then do that. Well, you don't want to do that, we'll do that. Well, okay, I guess it's okay if you do it. Letting them wear you down. They need to obey quickly, completely, and happily. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this idea is so borne out in one of my favorite parenting scriptures, which isn't about parenting, in 2 Corinthians 1:17. It says, when I planned this, did I do it lightly, or do I make my plans in a worldly manner so that in the same breath, yes, I say yes, yes, and no, no. As surely as God is faithful, our message to you is yes and no. And that needs to be our message to our children. And it's just so effective in that atmosphere of love and laughter. When you really have the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, you know, when those are what's flowing out of you as you mature personally as a Christian and overcome your own sin and demons, and that's the kind of person you become, then when you go from that happy thing to, I told you not to do that, it's sort of stunning. It's sort of that piece of godly sorrow that says, what alarm. That we need to expect obedience to our children in a way that they're a little alarmed and that they want to do what you said, that they take you very seriously. Because if you vacillate on that, and that's where that hard work is that I spoke about before, it's hard work to do this. It's such hard work to let your yes be yes and your no be no. Such hard work to mean what you say. Such hard work to think it through ahead of time and say, do I really want to tell him not to play with that thing on the floor? Am I going to say, oh, no, don't do that, and then they do it, and I think, oh, it's okay anyway, and I just move on, and they're left to think, I wasn't supposed to do this, but I got away with it. And we have to be dependable because God's dependable, and we're his representative in our children's lives. And so we have to think through what we tell them, and then we have to immediately follow up if they're disobedient.
You know, I've told dads this. We as fathers and mothers, but we have the authority of God behind us. We have God's authority to discipline and train our children. If we don't do it, we're not following God's instructions. And we have the voice of authority, the look of authority, and the pain of authority if we need to exert it. And it bore out in our 4 kids and our 10 grandkids. If you use those 3 appropriately, you can remove the pain real early on. We didn't have to spank our girls anyway. Boys are a different matter. Much after 2 years old. You know, you just look at them and you say, don't do that. The other day, about 6 months ago, Our 47-year-old son and his wife and 19-year-old and 17-year-old were sitting at our table. And I did that, cleared my throat, and Greg started chuckling. And my son, my 47-year-old son, I said, what are you laughing about? And he says, it brought back memories, Dad. At the table, when you would clear your throat, or in a room of other people, you clear your throat, that was a signal for us kids to stop what we were doing and look at you. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. He says, no, I am so grateful you trained us to be obedient. And here a 47-year-old is still, when Dad clears his throat, I'd say that's good. And he's not a marshmallow kind of guy.
And, you know, that scripture Ron read in Hebrews is talking about that discipline is painful. And a lot of parents will say, well, yeah, you know, I don't believe in spanking. In America, it's time out. That's the big discipline. And I've said, you know, that's great if it's painful for them. If time out is painful, that's fine. But if it's not painful, then it's not discipline. And if you send your child to their room and you think you're disciplining them, but you're really just giving yourself a break, you're not helping your child, because our goal as parents isn't just to control their behavior for a little while so we can have some peace. It's to shape their character so they can make it to heaven.
Yeah. And telling a child to do something and then not following through to see that he does it is teaching him to be disrespectful to authority. And this is so important. It's just vital that we get this, because we have observed for many, many years, and I'm sure we've done it ourselves, is telling our kids and then getting distracted, and they go on their merry way. The other elder in San Diego, who's now deceased, a wonderful man, he used to say, if we were at a family gathering or church activity and a child was misbehaving, he would go to the father and he would say, do you want me to take care of that or do you want to? One of us are going to take care of it. And I think we need to have that kind of attitude with each other. We need to be a family. We are a family. We need to act like a family. And if you see a child misbehaving and getting away with stuff you know he knows that he shouldn't be doing, and you see it and he sees you see it, and you're not saying anything, you're giving him approval to disobey. I saw this on the school grounds. A teacher would walk by. Two kids are doing something they shouldn't be doing. Teacher one, A, doesn't do anything. Teacher B comes by and says, "Guys, you're not supposed to be doing that." And they would say, "Well, Teacher A said it was okay." Teacher A didn't say anything, but in their minds, it must be okay. That's the way kids think. They're devious. We got to be smarter than they are. I love children.
I have to tell you, when our firstborn was little, there was a couple who we really respected their parenting in the mainline church. And I said, "I'm so afraid. What if I tell him to do something and he won't obey?" And this sister said, "You're bigger than he is." And I thought, oh, that gives me such relief. I can either spank him. If that doesn't work, I'll sit on him.
Yeah, we've had to do both with grandkids. But just in case you have a problem with paddling, jot these scriptures down. Proverbs, they're all in Proverbs 13, verse 24. It says, "He who spares the rod hates his children." To not paddle in the name of your superior wisdom is hateful to your child. That's what the Bible says. Don't argue with me. Argue with the Bible. Proverbs 22:15, 23:13, 29:15. You know, we need to have high expectations. No excuses. No. We don't persuade our kids to obey. We don't plead with them to obey. We don't bribe them to obey. We don't preach to them to obey. We expect them to obey. And when they don't, they suffer consequences. That's the way the world is. They need to learn that early on. We don't have much time to go into respect. Teach your kids to respect. If they say no, that's disrespectful. If they give, and at least in America, if they don't look at you when you're talking to them, that's disrespectful. I know in some cultures, it's just the opposite. Figure out what that culture thing is and make them be respectful. If they push or pull away, or if they talk back or stomp or slam a door, that's all disrespect. And if you don't deal with it, you're not training your children to be respectful. Let's see. Expect respect. Thank yous. Please. Teach children not to interrupt. You know, if they're in a group, you teach them just to touch your elbow and stand there and wait until you have a pause. But you need to have a pause, unless they're bleeding or a bone sticking out. You know, then interrupt what you're doing. Respect is a matter of the heart. It has to be taught in the heart. Okay, whew, we're through. Thank you.
Now, Ron, Linda, thank you so much. That's a lot of practical advice. It's a powerful punch. very inspiring, very directional. Why don't we just say thank you to them once